Today we have three. I have a sheet. Would like to also. Conservation plan. Today we have three cases following follows. Members of the planning and zoning staff will present facts in the background of the case. The applicant was invited to speak to the committee for the favor. Always invited to the committee and then invited. Which is the categories tonight? And the staff at the appropriate time or the sitting with our audio tape. Audio? Oh, it's seven. These are our files. At the end of the testimony, the public hearing is closed. The board may table the case for further information, or we may make a certified letter of board contact.
I do. Dave Lorenz, Sauk County Planning and Zoning, Conservation Planning and Zoning. This request is for a special exception permit to authorize the operation of a temporary hot mix asphalt plant in an existing quarry owned by the Kramer Company. The work is scheduled to take place from June through July of 2012. The property is located in the Agricultural Zoning District on real estate described as S. 950 County Road Q, part of the southwest quarter of the southwest quarter of Section 17, Column 13 North, Range 2 East in the town of Woodland. There were no land use permits found to have been issued at this location. Previous appeals to the board, four special exception permits have been issued since 1999 for mineral extraction and a temporary asphalt plant at this location. There were no citations found for this operation. When reviewing a special exception proposal, the Board of Adjustment reviews the proposed site to show that the approval shall be consistent with the general purpose and intent of the ordinance and to show the desirability of the proposed location for the specific proposed use from the standpoint of public interest because of such factors as without limitation because of enumeration, smoke, dust, noxious or toxic gases or odors, noise, vibration, operation of heavy machinery, heavy vehicular traffic, and increased traffic on public streets. Section 7.05, Parent 2, Parent L 19 of the Sauk County Zoning Ordinance provides that a special exception permit is required for mineral extraction activities. The site has been used for mineral extraction for a number of years. The special exception permit was granted in 2009 to the owner for the continued operation of the quarry for a period of 10 years. In 2010, a permit was granted to the applicant for the operation of a temporary hot mix asphalt plant at this location. Surrounding properties to the north are forested and agricultural properties. To the east are agricultural properties. The closest residence to the entrance of the quarry is about 1,100 feet. To the west are agricultural forested properties and a pond. The closest residence to the entrance going to the west is approximately 1,000 feet to the southwest. To the south are agricultural and forested properties, the closest residence being 1,300 feet from the quarry. Floodplain map panel 5511CO131E, the effective date is December 15 of 2009, shows that this site is not located within the floodplain, and there are no mapped wetlands indicated in this area. The town of Woodland is aware that this appeal has been filed with Sauk County Board of Adjustment. If I could direct the board, take a look at Exhibits 5, 1 and 2, which are the photographs. Photo number 1 is the entrance to the quarry at S-950 County Road Q. This would be on the north side of the road. Photo 2, that shows the western area of the active quarry, and that's the proposed location of this plant. Photo number 3 is a view to the north from the quarry. Photo 4, that's agricultural and forested properties just to the east of the quarry. And Gina, if we could start the video, please. Entrance to the quarry on the north side of Highway 2. Active agricultural building property south. Residential property west. The north. Looking to the west, that approximate location, proposed location, asphalt plant. To the north, and back. Looking south toward Highway Q. Planning and zoning would recommend that the following conditions be considered by the board should the board grant the special exception permit. A. All work on and use of the premises shall proceed with the plans and supplemental evidence presented at this hearing, and it is the responsibility of the applicant to secure all required town, state, federal, and county permits within 1 year of the hearing date. County permits required for this approval include a land use permit for the location of the plant. B, no work shall be commenced prior to receiving the Board of Adjustment's decision letter and securing the required permits. C, that the site shall operate under the terms and during the hours as permitted by Special Exception Permit ST-2909, and this permit is due to expire in September of 2012. The permit shall be non-transferable. E, the Sauk County Conservation Planning and Zoning shall be granted permission to view the site to ensure compliance with these conditions and other relevant provisions of the Sauk County Ordinance. The power to ensure compliance with these conditions is given to Sauk County Conservation Planning and Zoning. If the department finds that any of these conditions have been violated, they are hereby authorized to take corrective action, either through suspension of the permit, citations, or by any means of enforcement that is within their power. Finally, failure by the applicant to follow all the conditions set forth by Sauk County Board of Adjustment is grounds for suspension or revocation of the special exception permit and possible enforcement action. In order to have the special exception permit reinstated after suspension, the applicant must comply with all conditions established by the Board of Adjustment as determined by the Sauk County Conservation Planning and Zoning Director or appear in front of the Board of Adjustment. In order to have the special exception permit reinstated after revocation, the applicant must appear in front of the Board of Adjustment for a new hearing and comply with all requirements as outlined in this letter. In 2010, they got a permit for essentially the same use, and I don't recall hearing any complaints while this was the temporary hot mix asphalt plant was in use out there at that time. No, we inspected shortly after they removed everything, and it was back to its original conditions. The only other structures out there are a scale house. Yes. I believe so. Yes.
If I could, I need a clarification. According to the staff report and public notice, the only ordinance that we're referring to is 7.052L19, and the prior special exception permit in 2010, two. But the request for the special exception permit that I see here has a pencil correction on it where the L was changed to an A. Also, a special exception permit was issued for the construction of the mining operation back in 04, and it refers to A. I'm assuming that it is L that we are referring to.
Yes, the numeration of the special exception permits changed.
Okay.
And it was modified at that time.
So that's why. And so then the petitioner is where operating under L or A some of the days. Because his request pencil change K.
Yes. I do. John Traxler, Vice President of DL Gasser Construction Division of Matthew Construction Company. Our address is 1000 Terrytown Road, West Burton. Basically, we have a contract with Richland County Highway Department to produce hot mix asphalt from the Charlie Miller Quarry conditioned on this permit, and we're looking at doing the work in June. They would be doing the hauling and laying of the mix. We're just producing it for them, and the work that they have to do is in the northeastern portion of Richland County, so they were looking at alternative sites, or we looked at alternative sites to be able to produce this mix for them, and this was one of the ones that we gave them, and they liked the haul distance works good for them. And, of course, we know that the aggregate's real good. We've made mix there before. 2 years ago, we did some state highway projects there. And basically, we went to the township, and they were in support of us going there and doing this. And we'll abide by all the conditions of the mineral extraction permit that Kramer Company has, the hours and everything of operation. I can't think of anything else. If you've got any questions, I guess. Sure. Yes. Yes. I remember it was about 5 weeks. Yeah.
Very difficult project.
We just have the Richland County work to supply them mix, which should be able to get that done in a couple of weeks, but if maybe a township or something locally wants to have some work done while we're there, it could turn into maybe 3 weeks, and we're anticipating starting early June. No.
Is all aggregate used in the hot mix come from that quarry site?
No, there's natural sand is imported. In order to make a good quality mix, you need rock and you need sand, and that's a quarry, so all you have there is rock. Right, correct. Dave Lorenz, Sauk County Planning and Zoning. This request is for a special exception permit to authorize the location and operation of a contractor's storage yard with warehousing, outside storage, and the sales and rental of mobile homes, recreational vehicles, boats, and autos. The property is located in the commercial zoning district on real estate described as S1051 State Road 58, lots 1 and 2 of CSM 5510, part of the southeast half quarter of the northeast northwest quarter, section 15, town 13 north, range 3 east, town of Laval. Two permits have been found to have been issued at this location. In 2005, a sanitary permit was issued for a holding tank for an existing office in the storage shed. And in 2008, a land use permit was issued for an additional storage shed. No previous appeals have been found for the Board of Adjustment, and no citations were found. When reviewing a special exception proposal, the Board of Adjustment reviews the proposed site to show that the approval shall be consistent with the general purpose and intent of the ordinance and to show the desirability of the proposed location for the specific proposed use from the standpoint of public interest because of such factors as, without limitation because of enumeration, smoke, dust, noxious or toxic gases or odors, noise, vibration, operation of heavy machinery, heavy vehicular traffic, and increased traffic on public streets. Sections 7.09, parent 2, parent D, 10, 13, 15, and 16 of the Sauk County Zoning Ordinance provides that a special exception permit is required for a mobile home, recreational vehicle, boat and auto sales and rentals, lumber yards and other building material businesses involving outdoor storage, warehousing, and building contractor storage yards. Surrounding properties to the north and east are agricultural and few residential properties. To the west are agricultural and forested properties. And to the south, a residential subdivision and agricultural properties. Floodplain map panel 5511CO180E, which was effective December 15, 2009, shows that this proposed site appears to be located outside of the floodplain. And there are no mapped wetlands indicated in this area. The town of Laval approved this request October 10 of 2011, and the applicants have rezoned the entire property to the commercial district this month for this activity. And if I could direct the board to take a look at the exhibits 5, 1, and 2, that would be the photographs. Photo number 1 shows the existing storage buildings as seen from the southeast. Photo number 2 is the boat and vehicle storage to the west of the large shed that you see in photo number 1. Photo 3 is the northwest side of the main building. And photo 4 is a view from the northeast corner of the lot. And Gina, if we could view the video, please. Building is seen from Highway 58. Permit was issued in 2008. South residential property right across the road. Firewood right there. ground showing what area that's utilized for poke cars. Planning and Zoning recommends that the following conditions be considered by the board should the board grant the special exception permits. A, that all work on and use of the premises shall proceed with the plans and supplemental evidence presented at this hearing, and it is the responsibility of the applicant to secure all required town, state, federal, and county permits prior to commencing operation or any construction. County will require a change of use permit. B, no work can be commenced prior to receiving the Board of Adjustments decision letter. C, the permit shall be non-transferable. D, the Sauk County Conservation Planning and Zoning should be granted permission to view the site to ensure compliance with these conditions and other relevant provisions of the Sauk County Ordinance. The power to ensure compliance with these conditions is given to Sauk County Conservation Planning and Zoning. And if the department finds that any of these conditions have been violated, they are hereby authorized to take corrective action, either through suspension of the permit, citations, or by any means of enforcement that is within their power. E, failure by the applicant to follow all the conditions set forth by Sauk County Board of Adjustment is grounds for the or suspension or revocation of the special exception permit and possible enforcement action. In order to have the special exception permit reinstated after suspension, the applicant must comply with all conditions established by the Board of Adjustment as determined by the Sauk County Conservation Planning and Zoning Director or appear in front of the Board of Adjustment. In order to have the special exception permit reinstated after revocation, the applicant must appear in front of the Board of Adjustment for a new hearing and comply with all requirements as outlined in this letter.
Question.
Correct. Yes. Needed to rezone the entire property commercial for the uses that they're asking for here. Correct. This is to bring the property into compliance with the ordinance. Yeah, I believe that was reported to our department.
Okay. This
I would suggest that the board direct that question to Mr. Swanson.
Next question.
I have a disclosure to make, Mr. Pringle. I want you to know that I am a president of the town of Bell. I am familiar with one of the petitions, but he's on two occasions whose property. So, and currently, our pontoon is in storage on the property that we're speaking. Also, I had attended the town board meeting where the town plan commission had given the report, the approval made by the town board. Had questions, such a permit. Oh, I got this. This one, quote, town board. That's it. So, I'd like the board to know this and feel that I can be impartial and sort of like me use myself. Oh, boy. Well, I don't want any reverse occurring, so I think it might be in my best interest.
I was going to ask, I kind of forgot what I was going to ask. Oh, yes. Are they currently in violation of any... So, in other words, they were never given a permit to do for bulk storage, for example, but they're doing it anyway, so are they currently in violation of some ordinance?
That's correct.
And what is the consequence of that?
Well, they... There again, I should defer to Steve Sorensen because he was dealing with them on this situation. But it's my understanding that they are going through the rezone. They've gone through the rezone process and now are going through the special exception process in order to bring the property into compliance.
Of the
that I don't know. I know that there was one of the persons was operating the fire engine repair out of the large storage building in the past, but when the boats showed up, I'm not sure. Yes, I do. My name is Troy Rose, the owner of Cut and Run Tree Service in Redstone Marina at S-1051, Highway 58, Louisville. Well, I think I'll try to help clarify the issue that you brought up about us being in violation already. I've owned and operated my tree business out of this location for about 6 years, I think, since I bought the property, and I had stored boats inside the building, about two-thirds of the building. I had done that along with my tree business. I just did winter storage for boats. We didn't work on them or anything there. But this last fall, Crossroads Marine closed down, and I saw a need for boat storage because they had stored about 160 pontoon boats outside, and so I saw a continued need for this service in the area, and I had already kind of had my foot in the business, I guess you could say, boat storage. So I talked to a few of the employees from there, and we decided to kind of move the business over to our place to continue offering it. We did not know about the zoning issues. We had no idea that we were in violation.
until Mr. Sorensen contacted us, and at that time, he agreed to let us, I mean, the boats were already there. That's how he knew we were in violation. He saw the boats there. And, but we agreed that we would go through the process of trying to become legal, and so he said that we could, you know, he wouldn't penalize us in any way as long as we cooperated with him, and we have been doing so. So that's what happened, if that helps answer your question.
So is this or okay break of frustration? Oh. Or
no. No. No, I didn't think I needed permit. I don't do business there. I just store my trucks there, basically. You know, I...
Permit for 7.09, Aaron, lumber yards, other built aerial business, building height, storage, 15 is where? Building contractor storage, yeah.
Yeah, we put, yeah, when we get, yeah. No. No, I don't intend to say.
How many boats are currently stored on the property?
Total, inside and outside?
Yeah, well, mostly outside right now.
There are 52 pontoons and I believe about 10 boats.
Okay, is business looking to expand the number of boats stored on the property? You just said that you took over the business where 110 were being stored. So you are going to expand your storage area for outside storage of boats?
That probably will increase this year, but the areas that you saw in the video where the boats are stored there, I believe there's room for the extra boats beginning this fall in those areas. We won't need additional property.
I'm just wondering if you're planning to expand that area.
No.
Because one of the things I noticed that we are talking about an area that has a fair amount of slope to it overall, and will any of this activity create a greater chance of erosion or any harm being done to some of those greater areas of slope, especially right behind your building?
No, we won't be expanding in that area. We basically, you know, we just park the boats in there in the fall, and then we pull them out in the spring and put them back in the lake. We won't be further disturbing any of the landscape.
Hi, Bob fan. Robert Sand. Address that's in question is S-1053 North Highway 58. You had asked a question about the two permits, and that's something that we're trying to tell Steve and Brian to make sure that there were two permits issued because these are two separate properties. And how it got all combined, I really don't know. The whole idea behind it was with Troy. He's the one that asked me if he could just park boats on my property. Just, I own the back 3 acres of it. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's exactly right. And I wanted to keep my property up to legal specs so that there's no issues with any more issues moving forward. So,
do you have a copy of this?
Yeah. Not with me, but Troy does. I can
grab one.
So it's 3-8.
Yes.
That's one.
Okay.
So that explains why one area is called Lot 1, Lot 2.
Correct.
Okay, so the back lot is your property.
Yes.
All right. And so both of them have to be granted the exemption to make it all work.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me there is a slash line running diagonally across the overall property here. Can you tell me what that represents?
The dashed line on there, from what I remember, was the delineation for Lot 1. The back western side, left side of that picture, is the ag section. And the east side of that dashed line was a commercially zoned part of the property. Why they never... This all happened prior to my owning this building. When I bought it from Marvin Harchie, he had it set up like this, and I never changed it because I never did anything with that back west section. We just left it in A. But when Steve told us that we were in violation because my Troy's pontoon boats were starting to crowd that back corner, we had to bring this all into commercial zoning and then get your approval for that. Being able to outdoor warehouse.
Another question where it says on that map, existing driveway to be removed by construction of new
mm-hmm.
driveway.
Mm-hmm.
There are currently, in fact, two driveways, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right. The state.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say the state approved that, and what we're trying to do when this all went down, when I sold the building to Troy, basically I put everything in to satisfy the state's legal requirements that I needed. And they never told us to remove that until we get to the point of getting this taken care of now. So I haven't done anything with Lot 1. You saw the fire truck back there. That's my own personal fire truck. Everybody has to have toys. And and I use it for parts. I don't do any actual work on the premise. My job is to go to the fire stations to work. I need a place to store stuff. You know, my own junk. That's that tan building in the back. That's what that was there for. We're just basically, like you had said, trying to encompass everything that we may run into. We're not selling mobile homes. Motor homes, I think, is what they really wanted to say, but that fell under your... Yeah, you know, so... You'll have to ask Troy, because that's not... Yeah, he just basically dumps it off right there, and then he, cleans it all up and it's gone. When Dave took the pictures there, it's reduced and tiled now, so I think Troy might be processing it and using it in his own. He's got a wood burner at home. So.
Speaking of the fire truck,
mm-hmm.
and is there any possibility that you're looking in the future to expand that area so that area also becomes more or less a salvage?
I'm 55 years old. I want to retire pretty quick. So no, I want. Then that whole reason behind that was I did some work for Rock Springs, and they didn't have the money to pay for it, so they gave me that in lieu of it. And I'm just going to cut that up and take it out of there. But I just haven't got to that point yet. But no, I'm not going to expand in any kind of junkyard, salvage yards, or anything else. The other vehicles that you saw there were mine. My own personal ones are all licensed. So. Oh,
you. Steve Sorensen, and I'm with Scott County Planning and Zoning. A little history. Last fall, our office received a complaint of boat storage on the property, and I met with Troy and Bob with our planner, Brian Zimmer. And basically, we came up with a plan for rezoning the joint property together, and that was done earlier this year, if not late last year. But the rezoning's in place now for commercial. Both properties are commercial. And then the second component was this board of adjustment for the special exception use. And those uses were reviewed with both applicants, with our planner, and had staff approval. They have what you have, before you today, so... So, I didn't write citations. I could have, but they both were working with me. It was late in the year. These boats were from all over the state and from out of state. I didn't want to have to go through a circus of trying to relocate places for these boats to go. So I said, keep them there. If you're willing to come in on the rezoning, work with me on the Board of Adjustment, and they've done just that. I've had support from the town along the entire way. And Troy worked with me the entire way. I was happy with that, so. Yes. The neighbor is across the street, and that neighbor is also zoned commercial, and they were wondering how this use was not a commercial use, and I said it should be a commercial use. So that was the process. So right, once they found that out, they were going through the system, they were satisfied. Let me kind of back up here. So we started with a rezoning. We had two owners, but they were, I would call them partners in what they were doing because they were kind of sharing the uses. So we sent them through on one rezoning request, not two. And then we agreed to take them through one board of adjustment and not two. Because they're in what we would view as some kind of a relationship or partnership, that we could do that to save them the cost of both the rezoning hearing and a second board of adjustment hearing, and then we would handle them separately as the permits followed with the approval processes. So when they get done, if this is approved today with conditions, each applicant would need to see me on their individual permits for their individual properties.
But application.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yep. Depending on their use that they want. It's my understanding the town was looking at it as a boat storage issue was their main concern and use. Right.
Part of the
yes, outdoor storage boat. Again, just because of the nature of the product, the wood products being sold, we wanted to cover, you know, the trailers, the trucks, the product, and this covered all bases, if you will. So it's just all encompassing as far as the numbers we put for you. Right.
Safe and outside storage, recreational vehicles. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Troy's been doing that business for 6 years on the wood. Well, that sounds well over. Right. That's nothing new. This so wasn't I'm created with him. Right.
That's what I chose.
And I would ask the applicant that, but my understanding is they would be satisfied with that wording.
Reference to that building contractor storage yards, in other words, are we looking at storing excavation equipment, bulldozers, dump trucks, et cetera, there? Is that allowed under that wording? Does this area then become pretty much a catch-all for anything you want to throw in there?
Under Troy's business, under his wood business, he does have a truck, a trailer, and equipment related to taking down trees and hauling trees. So that's part of the yard and then the product itself. So all of those components kind of cover that language. And with regards to the specifics, I would have you address that with the applicant as far as the number of units he has out there. I believe a lot of it's stored in the garage as far as the actual vehicles.
You cleared up a lot of questions that I had.
Great.
Troy Rose.
Semi-trailers behind the building. Are those parked there as using for storage themselves, or is it just simply a place to put them? Are you intending to have more of them? What purpose do they serve?
Those are storage. I don't intend to put any more there. In fact, those are Bob's trailers. They've been there for several years. He just uses them for storage. Robert's hand. Yes. And also, you were discussing earlier about my trucks outside. I've always kept all my equipment indoors. I don't like things outside. But we just got a little bit crowded this winter with the. I got one truck outside. Typically, I've never kept any equipment outside. From a tree business. The semi trailers? I don't know. I've never been in them.
My wife made me put my toys in a box. So That's as light as I can make it. It's just, I live on Lake Redstone, and there's no storage. We can't have extra buildings or anything like that, and I just, you know, it's basically my personal junk, you know, it's been there. I only bought those because it, when Troy bought the building from me, I needed a place to store a lot of the stuff that I had stored in the building prior, so since it fell under the existing commercial allotment, I wasn't in violation for that, excuse me. That I knew of, anyway.
Well, just stating more or less, while I applaud your entrepreneurial efforts and everything here, that's to be congratulated. I am concerned. I don't want to have, because there's a lot of things that are covered here, and seemingly a lot of area for expansion, and I would be concerned that this property becomes a little bit of everything for everybody, and there is a kind of aesthetic value that could be lost if it just becomes a pretty much a catch basin for everything that comes along.
No, it hasn't happened. I've owned one of the properties at least since 2005, and I've kept it under control, like Troy said, too. The problem with where we're at, we're out in the middle of nowhere, and theft is a real problem. That's one of the reasons why when you take a look at from the street level, the pictures that Dave had taken, I like it because you can't see the boats back there. I know another person that's in LaValle just had to put up, I don't know how many thousands of dollars worth of fencing to go around it because people steal things from it because it's right there in front of everybody. We don't like that. The biggest problem with it is that nobody's there all the time, so it becomes, we don't want it to be a catch. Dumping ground. We have neighbors that do that. Yeah, that's the reason why I have buildings and things put away or tied to as much. And there isn't, in regards to your questioning about that, the ordinance is, Steve was saying that it's all encompassing. I was just looking at it from the viewpoint of where the wood is for building, like if he's doing any repairs for a pier, it's in the pier sales and stuff like that. Some of them need a place to put the wood. And if you guys want to strike it, that's not a problem either. It's something that we were asking. Right, right. The only people that I'd even be considering selling to would be Roy, because he's the only one that's worked with me over the years. I see what you mean. Okay. Yeah. Right, right.
Here?
Marine business is definitely coming. Move across people's pure work. I don't have a problem with that because that material will come and go as needed. As far as the wood hauling does, as far as the, you may have a thumb. I don't have that. But I think that have a big load your truck. I'm all for the expansion of a person's, you know, a living. I don't see people fetching it anyway.
I question whether it should two separate parcels. How can we as one?
The office
Yeah.
But it's just water tank and to clean up something that cement built.
We don't
It's the first one I've seen.
No, I also was confused when I read this over the first time. I wasn't sure exactly what was being asked for because of the nature of everything, but I think all of my questions have been answered, and I'm satisfied with the result.
Well,
Dave Lorenz, Conservation Planning and Zoning. This request is for a special exception permit to authorize the location and operation of a recreational camp at campground. The property is located in the Recreational Commercial Zoning District on real estate described as E8948 Museum Road, part of the southwest quarter of the northwest quarter and the northwest quarter of the southwest quarter, Section 2, Town 11 North, Range 5 East, Town of Freedom. 6 land use and sanitary permits have been issued to the society dating back to 1981. There were no previous appeals to the Board of Adjustment found, and as far as citations, the society was sent a notice of violation for camping in the flood zone in 2010. When reviewing a special exception proposal, the Board of Adjustment reviews the proposed site to show that the approval shall be consistent with the general purpose and intent of the ordinance and to show the desirability of the proposed location for the specific proposed use from the standpoint of public interest because of such factors as, without new limitation because of enumeration, smoke, dust, noxious or toxic gases or odors, noise, vibration, operation of heavy machinery, heavy vehicular traffic, and increased traffic on public streets. Section 7.08, parent 2, parent B, 16 and 17 of the Sauk County Zoning Ordinance provides that a special exception permit is required for recreational camps and campgrounds. Surrounding properties, to the east is the Bearable River and the village of North Freedom. To the west are agricultural and a few residential properties. And to the north and south are agricultural properties in the Bearable River. Floodplain map panel 5511CO378E has an effective date of December 15, 2009, shows that this proposed site appears to be located inside of the floodplain. There are mapped wetlands indicated to the west of this area. The Town of Freedom is aware of this appeal to the Board of Adjustment, and the property was rezoned to the Recreational Commercial District for this use in 2008. I'd like to direct the Board to take a look at Exhibits 5, 1, and 2, the photographs. Photo 1 shows the rail cars and depot on the north side of Museum Road. Photo number 2 shows that the cabooses are to be relocated to the south of that red shed, Coach Shed 1, further away than they currently are, further away from the river. Photo number 3 shows that's a view to the east, back towards north, the village of North Freedom. And photo 4, that shows the Baraboo River is just to the east of the tracks that currently are utilized for those cabooses. And if we could view the video too.
North edge of the property, cars, office, west of the entrance, and Coach Shed 1, the cars are to be located at the south of that building, further away from the river, at the village. Further south, that one of that, the bush is going to be located where the park cars are on the side of the bush there. Caribou River is close to the lines in that location. See the line of bushes south there. Floodplain does come up into that area, yes. Well, they'll still be in the floodplain location, but out of the floodway, which is more restricted than the general floodplain. Not the entire property, but where these tracks are located. Is mostly located in the flood fringe area. And it will be relocated up in this location, which would be the flood fringe as opposed to the floodway. Well, I believe they are movable, but that's where they will be located. There they're, again, they're talking about this location of where the boxcars are. And this is north side of the property. The same cars, the depot. Restaurant facilities. And there again, for the letters, the campground is used primarily for volunteers that are working at the location to help maintain the museum. It's not going to be like open to the public. Correct.
That's a little highlighted.
That is my understanding that in that location, that is where the cabooses are to be located. The other areas, I would refer that to the applicant to explain what he's showing there.
How much of this area in the flood fringe was flooded during our recent memorable high water?
In 2008, there was extensive damage to the buildings that were out there, as well as, it's my understanding, a lot of the existing cars that were out there. They had to repair all the gears and the wheels because of the flooding that took place and destroying the lubrication. So there was significant property damage. There wasn't anyone that nobody was killed or swept away or anything like that.
Yes, according to the information, the federal government taken our ordinance to control the flood way. This flood fringe area that caught up moving by Burton by Mount.
That is correct. Yeah, the county had to adopt new floodplain maps in December of 2009. That's the idea. That was pretty much the way it was going on, and that prompted our department to start working with the museum to get the zoning in place to allow for the special exception permit use for camping at the site, the camping of the volunteers. The ordinance doesn't address every situation, that's true.
Jeffrey B. Bloom, my address is 603 Main Street, Brownsville. I'm president of the Minnetonka Railroad Historic Society, located at E8948 William North Freedom. Well, I'm going to try to make a very, very long story short. The Railroad Museum is starting its 50th year in North Freedom when we open up in May. And we have some of our older members in the property. When I say older, I mean they've been members longer than I have. But from what I understand, the museum has always allowed its volunteer members to stay on the property. At one time, they stayed in the depot basement, but because of fire code regulation, we put a stop to that, and they allowed these volunteer members to own their own cabooses, and they were allowed to live in those cabooses, and on a temporary basis, like weekends. In fact, we've got rules in place if anybody has to stay in one longer, like our snow train event is a week long, members will stay for a week. Now they have to get permission from our manager if they're going to be there for more than a weekend. But this has been going on with our members staying in these cabooses for virtually 50 years. The flood of 2008, of course, brought things to a head. But as was mentioned earlier, the county had to adopt FEMA regulations as a local ordinance. And that's when I first met Mr. Sorensen. And I, by the way, was a witness of the flood. I was there from the start to the finish. And the water came up slow, and it went down slow. There was no rushing of rapids or nothing. In fact, it was so calm, it was like a lake. I couldn't believe it. But anyway, one of the reasons why we were never concerned is we thought we had federal preemption. And Mr. Sorensen and I went over that, and we still may have federal preemption. And I'll explain a little bit more about that. The railroad operation of the museum is regulated by the Federal Railroad Administration. Federal jurisdiction, the railroad portion of the museum has federal preemption. Okay. And believe me, they're a lot stricter than the county. And you don't mess with the Federal Railroad Administration. And when I first mentioned to Mr. Sorensen that, hey, we don't need any permits or anything because we have federal preemption, and Steve says, well, we don't know about Federal Railroad Administration. He says, you're going to have to actually prove this to us. So I called up the Chicago office of the Federal Railroad Administration. I'll refer to them as FRA. And they referred me right to the top at the Washington office. And we have our reporting marks so they know who we are. And they have, you know, our records and stuff like that. And I explained what we were doing. And the federal man says, boy, that's a rather unique situation. Because normally, keep in mind, a railroad company is more than 4 miles long. Hundreds of miles long. And when the railroads go out and do a big track maintenance program on, say, 500 miles in one summer, they'll go out with what's known as a work train. And the railroad workers will stay in these work cars, which are set up as bunk cars, dormitory, shower cars, kitchen, dining room cars. And they may set their train in Baraboo, for example, if they're working on a 50-mile stretch of track. And they get that done in a week, and the train goes. It may be in Fauk County 1 week, it may be in Richland County another, it may be in Ashland, it may be in the state of Minnesota in a month, you know. So it's not in one spot. The federal man says, well, you guys are staying there all the time. He says, boy, that's a... He says, you guys are unique. So when he said that, I thought, okay, fine. I'm going to talk to Mr. Sorensen because I didn't want to stir up the FRA. When he said we're unique, he would stay in those cars. Sitting there all the time. I said to Steve, okay, I can't prove federal preemption. What's our next step? And Steve says, well, we got to go through the process, and that's what we're doing. We're here to make us legal. And when the existing outfit car tracks were put in, where the cabooses, as you saw on the slide presentation, or the movie presentation, when they were put on those tracks, those tracks were built to the codes and ordinances of the time. And this was prior to 2008. probably 10 years prior to the flood. Because at that time, the only real restriction we had was we had to stay so many feet from the river, and I believe it was 150 feet. We had to keep the side of the track couldn't be any closer to the river. And at that time, that 150-foot mark to the river was the flood zone. Well, the year 2008 prompted changes, and I think there's more changes coming down the road from what I hear. And it's going to be quite difficult to live next to any waterway in the state of Wisconsin or in the United States, I think. And so we looked around. What do we need to do? Mr. Sorensen says, well, we can't allow any living in railroad cars in a floodway. Because the floodway moved out from where it was to include all the cars. See, now, if may I approach this, Mr. Chair, your map? Okay, the tracks for the cabooses are now are way down here. They're off this map, okay? Okay. I just wanted to point off. So we looked around and said, well, what can we do? And Steve says, well, we got to get them out of the floodway. There's no question asked about that. Okay, fine. So where do you go with about 20 railroad cars? They've got to be on railroad track. You can't just build railroad track anywhere because you got to own the land, number one. So we looked at the yard where you saw the boxcar storage. It is out of the floodway, but it still is in the flood trench. And I understand that the permit is given, it'll be allowed to be in the flood trench, with probably some exceptions. The flood of 2008 was up to here on me, where the cabooses are now. But we're proposing the damage to the equipment Mr. Lorenz alluded to was basically to the diesel locomotives, because they have motors down on the wheels. They all had to be sent in and be rewound. We now know about the gauge at Rock Springs. And if that's predicted to go up over 22 feet, that stuff's moving out of town fast. But we hope that doesn't happen again. The buildings were damaged, and of course the buildings are still there. You can't move buildings. They're not on railroad tracks. You can't move them. So the buildings are still there, and we're at the mercy of the river. If it ever does it again in 500 years or 2 years, we don't know. The other yellow highlighted areas, in talking with Mr. Sorensen and Mr. Lorenz, we thought as long as we're getting a permit for camping, and keep in mind this is not per se like you would think a public campground where all kinds of campers pull in and the people set up their grills and tents, and this is basically for our own members. But we do have volunteer members come in that own motorized camping vehicles. And they may work in train service on Saturday and Sunday. They'll pull in Friday night. They'll stay in their mobile camper Friday night and Saturday night, and then Sunday after the last train they go home. And occasionally we will have a Boy Scout troop come and say, hey, can we pitch our tents here? So the other areas highlighted in yellow are basically, you'll see by the office building there's a short square in yellow. That's basically the office parking lot. That'd be the one closest to you. Don't bring your hand down towards you. Yep, that's the office. Basically the office parking lot.
That tune is in the front fringe, but not the floodway. Then if you go by where the depot is, there's a rather long yellow hash mark. That too is our parking lot. And then if you go directly south of the restroom building, you'll see a rectangular yellow hash mark. Now that's a grassy area. And that is where...
Both of these?
No, just that one. Yeah, just that one. That's a grassy area. And that's where Boy Scouts in the past have pitched tents for like one night. Like their troop will come in and say, hey, we're in the area. And we stay here, you know, because we want to ride the train tomorrow night. Yeah, we'll let them stay there. And then the final one is to the south there where you're pointing out, yeah. That is also part of our parking lot. And there again, all the highlighted areas for allowing campers to stay on a temporary basis are all out of the flood way. But they're all in the flood fringe. Normally, when the Baraboo River floods, it barely gets up in our depot parking lot. 2008 was the first time it went beyond that. So, you know, you might say it's once in a blue moon thing or not, you know, but anyway, you know, we're respectively asking the Board of Adjustments to grant our permit, our exception permit, because, well, to be real plain about it, Mid-Continent could not exist if it weren't for its large pool of volunteers. The museum has always operated from hand to mouth. There's always more money needed than that comes in, and tourism is down now all over, which creates more of a problem. So, you know, we're asking that you approve it. We do not see any hazard to life, and the only damage that really happens to the caboose cars is the journals have to be repacked, you know, with the pads that have the oil that lubricate the wheels. Can the cars move? Yes, they're on track. They can move. But they normally don't move because there again, Federal Railroad Administration comes in. They don't say anything about our cars that are on display. And some cars are 100 years old. They'd be very difficult to bring up to compliance today. But for a museum, the FRA will say, okay, these cars are on display. You know, if they got a broken air hose, we don't care because you don't use it. And the same thing with these cabooses, they are not maintained to be roadworthy at a minute's notice. They all could be made to be roadworthy if the owner of the car wants to stick the investment in to make it roadworthy. So we got a couple things there. You know, we're under the Federal Railroad Administration here, and we're not there, and one area is a gray area. So we just want to cooperate with Sauk County, go through the permitting process, and go from there. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. The railroad cars may be a gray area with FRA, but the other allowing campers in is definitely camping. Yeah. But it's private camping, basically, not a public campground, per se. It's not, oh no, no, for sure no profit. I don't remember the year. We have the restroom building, which has three restrooms in it. It's got a public men's, a public woman's, and then it's got a member's. And somewhere back around 92, and I believe it was Sauk County, we used to have, see, we have holding tanks. The conventional system wouldn't work there.
because of the lowness. So we're not connected yet to the village of North Freedom, which we may be someday. But we were required to replace our old 1,000-gallon holding tank. Just keep in mind, and this is rather hilarious, back in the days when we had the 1,000-gallon holding tank, we had 50,000 people visit the museum from May 1 to October 30th. Okay. Today, that number is down to 28,000, and it's been hovering at around that 28,000 for years. There's many reasons why, and we ain't going to go into the analytical part about why tourism is down or why they don't come out to the museum. But the some regulatory agency at the time, and it would have been the county, probably before Mr. Lorenz or Mr. Sorensen were involved, but they came out and said, hey, you guys got to have 14,000 gallons worth of holding instead of 1,000. I mean, we were pumping this 1,000 twice a day sometimes, you know. So the specifications were drawn up, and 14,000 gallons worth of holding tanks. The holding tanks, you can see the samples right here. So the sewage system is compliant with the green fencing. Get above the high water mark. But the restroom facilities and the sewage disposal system is adequate to hold, you know, say maybe an average of 35,000 people a year coming in over a 5-month period. So the occasional Boy Scout troop setting up tents and one or two of maybe of our members pulling in with campers is so minimal to the sewage system. The general public load on it is the high thing for us with sewer. And we do have, on the south end where the outfit cars are now, we do have one porta potty there all year. In the summer, you bring another one in. So down by the cabooses, there's two porta potties in the summer one. They're used more than in the winter. There's nothing colder than a caboose in the wintertime, I'll tell you that. Even with a stove in it. There are showers already. The members' restroom has showers. So, I guess I've said enough.
Good questions. When all this damage was done in 2008, what was the source of the funds to make repairs and restorations?
Okay. We got a grant in the form of a forgivable loan. FEMA to Sauk County in Mid-Continent. And that was around $425,000. And that loan will be totally forgiven a certain percentage per year as long as we stay in business in Sauk County. In other words, that loan was an incentive for us not to say, well, everything's wrecked, we're picking up and moving. We refer to it as the Sauk County forgivable loan, but the money came from the feds, I believe. You know, Steve, for sure? I think it was fed. Okay. Oh, that's right. You can't talk to them. Excuse me. Then we got a Small Business Administration loan, which is principal and interest paid back. And that was also for around $425,000. And we raised on our own through donations around $150,000. And all that added up did not cover. We are still recovering from that flood, and we will be for
I predict the next 10 years. Because, we're not going to get another forgivable loan. SBA says they borrowed us enough. FEMA says, well, when you're maxed out, come talk to us. So we did, and they said, well, we pulled out of here now. This case is closed. So, but anyway, if you add up all those figures, even though a substantial amount, was granted, a substantial amount was borrowed, and a substantial amount was raised, it did not cover all the damage. And we'll be recovering for that for many years, and some things may never be repaired.
The second question, then, in the history of this site, has there been anything that approached the size of the 2008 flood in the past? Has there been any high water that did? When was the last time there was major flooding of the property?
Since I showed up there as a volunteer in 1982, we had two significant floods prior to the 2008 one. None of them did any damage to our buildings or equipment. No railroad washed out or anything. Now, we have had flooding on the Sealy Creek down at LaRue, where it washed out some of the railroad one time when we had a heavy rain. But that was, the creek went up fast and went down fast. Creeks like the flash flood rivers, they come up slow and go down slow. But that's way down at LaRue, so that isn't even what we're talking about. But to answer your question, no. In the past, we have never had any buildings or anything damaged, to my knowledge, at our facility in North Freedom. The highest I ever saw the water get in the location where this map is it lapped up on the very north end of the depot parking lot. The bridge was always able to take the total flow under it. The 2008 flood was not, and it started to go over the railroad tracks and wash. In fact, it went all the way up, lapping up against the office building. So prior to that, no. And longtime resident Harley Bodak, who is deceased now, he lives right up in the area there, and he was down there every day, too, trying to help us move things and so on and so forth. And he said, too, he's never seen that in his life. Never seen the river like that. And that's what I heard also from many residents from North Carolina. They've never seen that before. It was a fluke, It happened. To my knowledge, the existing buildings are grandfathered. To my knowledge. Right now, where the flood fringe line is drawn, it would probably take a special exemption permit to allow a new building to be built in a flood fringe. Well, this may be. But I know that as of right now, my thinking is we can't build any buildings at this location. Now, Mr. Sorensen or Mr. Lorenz could address if a permit could be issued to build a building in the flood fringe. And it might be if it's built high enough. It would have to be above the high water mark in the 2008 flood.
There's a
office.
Yep.
This map,
that's also yours?
Yes, that's our main office building. That building, the water came up to around it, and the only thing that took water chest deep was the basement of that building. And we have since made repairs to the some of the walls down there and the sump pump. And it probably wouldn't have flooded if we, back then already. But basically, the office building was the only building not structurally damaged by the flood. Well, the cook shed really wasn't structurally damaged either, nor was the engine house. The depot is the one that really was damaged badly because it had hardwood flooring in it and the water was 14 inches above the floor. So you can just imagine how that hardwood all buckled and everything in it. I was built in 1894. It was up at Rock Springs and moved to our location. Unfortunately, the whole inside and flooring had to be gutted, so it's 2009 inside and 1894 outside. We tried to make it look like the same type of wood, you know, you try to recreate. But, well, she was damaged pretty badly, and if a flood like that comes along again, the depot will be damaged again. You know, sitting right in the same spot. So we did remediate track side improvements. Instead of having a gravel and brick depot platform, and of course the brick would be very prototypical for the period we're trying to portray, now she's all concrete and blacktop. And I believe that was in the permit to do those repairs, that we had to flood-proof the new platform so there was no washing out. But I was there, I was a witness, and we had plenty of time to get out. So, okay.
I was just curious why 50 years ago North Freedom Site was chosen to build this museum.
Well, the Mid-Continent Railroad Museum started as the Railroad Historical Society of Milwaukee, I believe was their original name. And it was started by, I believe, five people. And these people had a very keen interest in preserving steam locomotives, because in the late 50s, most of them were gone already. Some of the railroads were still hanging on to a few of them to use for stationary steam and that. And these guys got together and they decided, you know, somebody needs to preserve these things. Because the mentality back when the railroads were getting rid of these, there was no interest really to save them. They were junk. Get rid of them. The same thing when great-grandpa scrapped his Model T. It was junk. Boy, today I wish we had that, you know. But then they were looking, they started to get donations in of equipment, railroad equipment. Well, where are you going to go with it? Not now, Milwaukee. So they found a friendly railroad up in Hillsboro, called the Hillsboro Northeastern. It was maybe like a 5 mile long railroad. And I believe it went from Hillsboro to Union Center. And it, they were friendly and they allowed Mid-Continent to operate there. And Mid-Continent was looking for a permanent home. And if you're going to run a railroad, you just can't move into any old town. You got to move into one where there's a railroad you can buy. And the Northwestern had this branch line out here in North Freedom to LaRue, to the quarry, laying dormant, and they were willing to sell it. Probably more than willing to sell it. So Mid-Continent somehow scratched the funds together, and they bought the right-of-way and the track structure, and then everything started to blossom from there. More members came in. They started running trains. They found out people will actually buy tickets to ride these trains. So they thought, wow. So everything started to expand. The height of the ridership was 1991, 50, a little over 50,000 riders. That was the peak. It went up and now it's down. And we're trying to, you know, get the ridership up because there's a rather large impact of tourism for a county that has a facility like ours located in it. Even if you're down to 28,000 people, they still go to the restaurants. They still buy fuel. They still go to the stores. They still stay in the motels. And so tourism has a pretty big impact, and we don't have any intention of moving out of Sauk County, but we know the river is going to make our life miserable.
So, any others? Yes, sir.
Mr. Ruby, you indicated in your letter that you were going to go to the Freedom Board meet on. Mm-hmm. You don't have a report here if they approve.
Okay. I attended, along with Mr. Sorensen, the Town of Freedom Plan Commission. That was the first step. And they approved it, because they verbally approved it right there that night. And then the next step, we had to go before the full town board, which we did. Mr. Sorensen accompanied me again. And the full town board approved it verbally right there. Maybe Sauk County Zoning Planning has written information from the township.
No. Not yet.
Okay. But those are the two hoops we started with before we showed up before this body. Okay, thank you.
Cindy Hartline from North Freedom, Wisconsin. I am a resident of North Freedom my entire life, and my family has been a member and volunteer of the Mid-Continent Railway since they were established in North Freedom. My family also owns a property adjacent to Mid-Continent Railway. It would be just west of the office building. At this time, we're not opposed to any members camping in the cars. They have historically done it for years. It is not, to verify, it is not open to the public as far as camping facility. It is only to offer our volunteers a place to stay. It's hard enough to get volunteer participation when there's so many expenses and that type of thing. So it does offer them the chance to be able to give them lodging while they are doing the work for the museum. And I guess that's mainly what I just wanted to verify what Jeff Bloom had said, that we've never offered it or opened it to the public at all. The museum has drawn in tourists into Sauk County, and because the volunteer base is getting harder to get volunteer help in this day and age, the least we can do is offer them a place to stay. And they're staying in their own place, their own private car. Very rarely do we have anybody pitch a tent, only on special occasions. The weather is usually good or they don't. And in inclement weather, you aren't going to find the volunteers there working either, as far as a flood situation or something like that. They're just not going to be there. So that helps the safety factor with having them in the area or not in the area during those inclement times. And I just wanted to verify what Jeff had said. We would not be opposed to it as a neighbor, but that would go against our nonprofit status, and the museum would not do that. We have to stay within the realms of our nonprofit status, so that would not be an issue for the museum at all. Mm-hmm. may I add, with the flood situation, my husband and I were also there. We also have a private car on the property, and it too got wet, basically. I had never seen it that high as anybody else in the area. That was just unreal. I don't think we were in any more of a dangerous situation than probably the campers at Devil's Lake or anybody else at that point in time. But being in a railroad car, it is not like being in a tent. You're not on the ground. You are at least 3.5 feet up, 4 feet up, as far as the body of the car. And the water is not going to move the car. They are so heavy that they're not going to move anything like that. So the safety factor is much greater than a camper in a tent at Devil's Lake or anything else. But I've never seen it that bad.
Steve Sorensen, Planning and Zoning. Any questions? I've been with Jeff through this whole process since 2008. Just kind of a little history. When we had the flood in 2008, there was substantial damage that was mentioned, and we worked with the railroad. There was some mention about the funding. There is a percentage of that did come from the county. I can't tell you what that is, but some money did come from the county, the state, and the feds, all to keep this thing going. And then with that change to the floodplain map, it changed the line or the boundary of the floodway. So these cars that were illegal non-conforming lost that status once that boundary and the flood hit. So the goal was to get those cars out of the floodway, out of harm's way, if you will, put them on a lower potential of harm, if you will, and Jeff's going to work with me now on, if we get approval, on taking the permits to make that move happen. There's got to be a plan in place that they have for the campground on, you know, monitoring the river. I think there's a 72-hour notice that works through the campground exits. Their electrical's got to be flood-proofed. You know, all these, their sanitary's got to be flood-proofed. And during the flood, by the way, when Jeff walked out, the power, to my knowledge, is on at the campground. I'm amazed no one was electrocuted. I mean, it with the water and everything being charged, we got lucky. And fortunately, nothing's happened. And the goal is to get this move out so if we do have a flood, we don't have anybody injured or killed in this event. So that's the goal. Jeff's been working with me. Like I said, we've had this rezoning, I think in 2008 or 9. That was the first step. The permits have been in place now to repair the depot, the loadout. Some of the tracks have been repaired. And now to get this campground in place, I think, is the last component, and then the permits will follow. So. Under my campground rules, they can stay there for up to 180 days in a flood fringe. Floodway, they're prohibited, but in a fringe area, the camping could be allowed for up to 180 days, and I think that fits within the parameters the members would work out there. And they can even have it year-round, provided the units, and the units can stay there year-round. It's just the camping within the units cannot exceed 180 days. Yes. There's another component to this, is some of the cars that have historically had camping in them at their current location, I've talked to the feds, they can keep those cars on the track in the floodway, provided they're not camping. So if they became part of the museum show or artifacts, it's just a historic feature, that could stay in the floodway, provided the camping wasn't occurring in that caboose, if you will. So of those 20-some cars, I'm not sure if all of those really need to move. Just the ones that really want to do active camping need to be in the flood frame. It is, and this is just, again, if this is approved today, I'm going to be working with Jeff on the plans to make this campground happen.
Jeffrey Bloom. I probably should have informed the board, you know, what Mid-Continent is legally. It is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And under the Internal Revenue Code of 170c, it's a tax-exempt organization where if you make a donation to it, your donation would be tax exempt as far as the IRS law applies to you in your situation. We're also incorporated under the laws of the state of Wisconsin as a nonprofit, non-stock corporation. And what Mrs. Hartline was talking about when you said we could maybe open up a campground, yeah, we could, but that part would not be tax exempt. We would basically have to form a subsidiary that we would have to pay income tax on, probably sales tax on the rental of the lot, and believe me, we don't want to get into that. The what, ma'am? The gift store's revenue is generated for our mission. It's been determined by the feds and the state tax departments that the gift store still has to pay sales tax. We still have to collect sales tax for selling a gift shop item, but we don't have to pay state or federal income tax because both agencies have determined that the revenue generated from the gift shop is part of our mission selling railroad trinkets and that. I shouldn't call him trinket, Jeff, since he worked hard in the gift shop, but gift shop items, it's for the mission of the entire organization. In other words, any profit the gift shop shows goes in to support our entire nonprofit status. It's directly related, yes. Yes. So, I think if there aren't any more questions, I can't think of any more, but I just wanted to clarify our tax exempt situation. So. Okay.
Bring up?
I'll move to
second. I'll second that. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None? Here's my turn.
Well,
I'm going to let you hold in the net. I don't want to see none.
Okay. Right.